This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Wednesday afternoon, December 18th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Before handing over that phone to a child this holiday season, be sure to set the rules for safety first. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, the Federal Reserve is set to decide on a key interest rate cut today, with most traders betting on a quarter point reduction. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is David Jones, Chairman, DMJ Advisors in Denver, Colorado, and author of the book, Understanding Central Banking. David, thank you for joining us today and help us understand central banking, David. It seems like the calculus has changed for the Fed. They were cutting interest rates because they thought the fight against inflation was largely over and that their job was to shore up the job market, but maybe that mission statement has changed a bit going into 2025.
I think it has changed a bit. I am looking for a quarter point cut at this meeting, but I think the Fed may pause for a while going into next year. The economy is actually still in a fairly good place, and I think the Fed is changing its focus from the inflation target. The latest CPI number ran at 2.7%, well above that 2% target. But I think they're changing that focus to the unemployment rate, that is to the labor force. That unemployment rate is at 4.2%. I think the Fed wants to keep that unemployment rate between 4 and 4.5% in order to keep the economy in fairly good shape.
Now, last year when the Fed was raising interest rates, when they finally stopped, they had something called a hawkish pause. They weren't going to raise interest rates again, but they were hold them steady and just talk about how they reserved the right to raise interest rates once again if the data allowed for it. Is that what we're going to hear today? Is it going to be a hawkish cut?
Well, like we could make it, let's say, a dovish cut. The Fed's been leaning toward lower rates. I think the Fed's neutral rate is probably down around 3%. So in the Fed's mind, it has a way to go. I don't believe that neutral rate is as low as the Fed thinks, but I think the Fed's view is they've got some more room to cut, but they have to be more careful about that cutting, and they can take their time in those rate cuts.
Now, when we talk about how inflation is stubbornly above target, closer to 3% than 2%, this should not come as a surprise to anybody who's been listening to our conversations, David, over the years, because that cutting inflation down to the 2% target, it's the same last mile problem you encounter in any number of disciplines and practices. Getting to that 2% target is the toughest part.
You could not have said it better. That's exactly right. That last move down to that 2% target is going to be a difficult one. And rates right now seem kind of sticky, again, with that fairly high CPI number year over year at 2.7%.
What is the what are some of the factors keeping the CPI at that frustrating, 2.7%, 2.6% on a year over year basis, keeping it from going down? Is it the services sector? Is it the cost of housing? Is it one particular element of the economy that's proving very difficult to tame with higher interest rates?
You just named the two that are critical: services and the cost of housing are both key factors in keeping that rate high. And anybody who has had an electrician or a plumber come into the house realizes that those service costs are going to stay high and they're going to be very difficult to bring down.
David Jones, Chairman, DMJ Advisors in Denver, Colorado, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. Thank you for joining us today to set up the Fed's interest rate decision later this afternoon.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Set guidelines that ensure safety before gifting a smart device to a child this holiday season. Let's get some insight from Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions, member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force in Chicago. Jerry, thank you for joining us today. And a lot of parental work has to go into gifting that smart device to your child before you see their face light up on Christmas morning.
Absolutely. And it should be scary. You hear all of the things that happen today with social media and kids on different sites. It's very important for us as parents to make sure that we're watching over that, not only on their phones, but also on their tablets and their computers.
Now, we talk about device safety, information safety, online stranger danger, but that's just the beginning of some of the issues that you and your child have to really hash out once they get that device, because there's also the digital addiction component, because even though you as a parent may have spent the last 6 or 7 years staring at your phone, you may not like your child doing the same.
Absolutely. And both Apples and Androids allow parents to take some control in what their children can see, can do online and with their phones, who they can call, as well as how long they can be on the phone. So by setting up an Apple family sharing account for your child, you can protect them for specific types of content, the types of applications they can use, and purchases. If you're going to allow them to purchase anything, it'll limit them from being able to install applications. There's all kinds of different things that they can do. Probably one of the most important is the ability to block them from sharing photographs.
Now, you, as someone who's worked in cybersecurity for a very long time, Jerry, you know we can literally have this discussion all day about a lot of the dangers that your kids face online, whether it's with a smartphone, a tablet, video games, you name it. But it seems like the first thing that you should do is set up, even write down some rules of the road that both you and your child are going to adhere to.
Absolutely. And there are different types of contracts that you can enter into with your children. While there's probably nothing legally you can do with them, at least it gives you an opportunity to speak with your child about what the limitations are going to be. And you can download these templates and then make changes to them and have communication with your child so they know what is allowed and what's not. And that's important for us to do, setting expectations.
And then when it comes to things like FaceTime, making sure that they're talking to only trusted contacts, that they're not showing off their house to a stranger who may have approached them online. What are some things you can do as a parent to make sure you have pretty tight control over their chat and text and FaceTime contacts?
Absolutely. And again, both Apple and Androids do have child controls within their applications to make sure you're limiting who they can communicate with, how they can communicate with them. But those applications only go so far. There are third-party applications out there as well that give you more control Unfortunately, they do cost, something, but the two top applications out there that you might want to look at just to see additional functions that you can take are Aura and Bark. Those two both can be installed on computers, on tablets, and on different types of cell phones. And they provide an even more granular access to applications, usage, and different websites that you can allow them to go to, as well as notification to you should the child actually even attempt to go to them. So it may block them, and that's fine, but if you don't know they're trying to go there, that can be an issue for you.
Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions and member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force based in Chicago. Coming up next, KFC unveils a new restaurant concept designed to satisfy Gen Z cravings.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
KFC is heating things up with Saucy, a new concept spotlighting adventurous dips and tenders. Let's learn more from R.J. Head of Analytical Research at the Los Altos, California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like the Colonel is training his forces on Cane's Chicken.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that KFC opening up this secondary concept, Saucy, is in direct response to losing ground to players like Raising Cane's and Chick-fil-A and some of the hot chicken concepts that have popped up. I think this does very well align with some of the trends that we've seen in the space, a movement towards a more streamlined menu where you just have chicken tenders and a few options, but offer more sauce varieties. And obviously we've spoken about Raising Cane's sauce and other movements in the space like that before, but it still allows some personalization, some customization, and keeps the speed of service where it needs to be. So I think it's an interesting concept. It'll be interesting to want to watch.
Now, Raising Cane's is the first thing that comes to mind, just simply because people love that Cane's chicken sauce. I mean, I'll introduce you to my five-year-old who literally will have Cane's chicken sauce with every foodstuff imaginable. So it is a hit. But it's also, there's Wingstop. There are some other kind of fast casual chicken wing places that do have that variety of sauces. So what can KFC do to make their sauce offerings unique or interesting compared to stuff the public already knows and likes at the competition?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's going to be one of the challenges here is that they're going to have to balance some of the quote-unquote classics sauces that are out there, but also come up with some new innovations. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, this is a company that is a sister company of Taco Bell, obviously known for its innovation. I wouldn't be surprised to see them leverage some of the other brands that are out there to come up with some new sauce varieties. And I think this is something that they'll continuously find new innovations on that front. So I think that's going to be part of the fun of this this concept and seeing what they develop. And I think it'll create a lot of buzz.
Also, we've talked about just a lot of the price pressures that these fast casual chains find themselves under, and that the most cost-effective protein to serve these days is chicken. So this is franchises are competing in this space. I mean, chicken is hot for a variety of reasons, but for among them, it's cheaper compared to ground beef.
You're right, and I think that is one of the elements here. Certainly KFC is obviously a chicken brand, but I think just designing a concept that is better set up for unit economics, meaning that this concept should be more profitable than their legacy stores if done right. I think they can get higher transactions through. I think that the cost of operating between both food and liver, especially as you factor in the kiosks that they'll have to order, I think this sets up for higher unit level profitability for the company. I'll be interested to see how quickly they roll out, but certainly I think it's a worthwhile test for the company.
Now, at the same time, this seems like, once again, Southern cooking conquering the rest of the United States. You have KFC, you have Chick-fil-A, closely identified with the South. You have Cane's, which also started in Southern states. And you also have, like, Chipotle introducing brisket, a staple of Southern barbecue. So America loves Southern cooking.
It does, and it really has been a trend, not really just in the last couple of years, but if you look really the last 10 to 15 years, I'd say some of the more influential and more disruptive concepts within the space have really derived out of the Southeast, South and Southeast. So I think you're exactly right. It's been interesting to watch, and particularly as consumers have migrated around the rest of the country, I think it's really helped for some of these concepts to take off. I think that's been a big part of their success.
RJ Hottaby, head of analytical research at the Los Altos, California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
This is Nancy Hardy. Some new Chicago Board of Ed members want to slow down contract negotiations until they're sworn in.
The ethics report on a controversial member of Congress will be made public. In Personal Finance Wednesday, as the calendar turns to January, it's important to have a money plan for the coming year. And retailers are looking to cash in on the growing interest in skincare and beauty among teenagers and tweens. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 100 points, NASDAQ up 41, the S&P 500 up 9.5. Cloudy skies right now in Chicago, 31 degrees. It's 12:31, topping our news of the half hour. Some incoming members of the Chicago Board of Education want the panel to wait until they're seated before approving a new teacher's contract.
Angel Gutierrez is asking CPS why this week's training was canceled and for the current board to hold off on significant decisions until new members are sworn in next month. Gutierrez and Carlos Rivas, who both won over CTU-endorsed candidates, tell the Tribune it would be a mistake to approve a teacher's contract before they're seated. The union is pushing to get it done before President Trump takes office over concerns he'll dismantle the Department of Education. Meanwhile, advocacy groups are concerned some contract proposals would take away control from principals and teaching time as CPS struggles to recover learning lost over the pandemic. Nancy Hardy, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
The House Ethics Committee has voted to release the report on its investigation into former Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz. More from CBS News political reporter Torian Small.
The fact that this panel has secretly decided to release the report could mean that the contents of this is significant enough, but also would be another hit to Mike Johnson's influence.
Gaetz was President-elect Trump's choice for attorney general, but stepped away in the wake of the controversy over the pick. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Art Hogan, chief market strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. Art, thank you for joining us today. And I'm a Chicago sports fan, Art, so I know a thing or two about losing streaks, especially in 2024. I watched that really long White Sox losing streak over the summer. You know, the Bears are mired in another losing streak, but so's the Dow Jones Industrial Average. But today, it looks like the Dow's about to get off the schneid.
Yeah, you know, we have to go back to 1978 to see a losing streak this long for the Dow. The interesting thing about the Dow, though, Rob, as compared to the White Sox and the Bears, is that it's largely impacted by stocks that have big prices, right? So it's a price-weighted index. And so if you're a 400 stock like UNH, United Health was, it was a 500 stock and now it's a $400 stock, that's going to have a huge impact on the Dow Jones Industrials, which just has 30 stocks. So I think it's overstated that it's been in a slump here, and it certainly doesn't compare to some of the sports analogies that we'd like to make. And I'm glad to see it bouncing a little bit here today.
And on top of that, this follows a pretty substantial run-up during the month of November. So even with that losing streak, or with that streak of down, closing down, they haven't given back all of those gains from early November.
Yeah, you've got a stock that index is down just about 3% from its all-time high and just about 2.5% from the beginning of its losing streak 9 days ago. So not incremental down days, but not a big change. And I would say that's true of all the markets right now. The S&P not far off its all-time high, 1.5% away, and the NASDAQ seems to put in a new high every other day here.
We have the Fed interest rate announcement coming in just a matter of minutes, and chances are the Fed's going to cut by a quarter of a percentage point, but they will more than likely recalibrate their expectations for next year. And some of those Fed futures markets now zeroing in on maybe 2 rate cuts next year, down from a potential of 6.
Yeah, so it's interesting. In September, they penciled in 4 rate cuts for 2025. And they'd like to take that down. But the good news, Rob, is they're taking that down for the right reasons, meaning economic growth continues to keep inflation sticky in the last mile here. So we've got unemployment at 4.2%. They've penciled that in as 4.5% for the end of this year. So unemployment's doing better. Inflation is not coming down as rapidly as they'd like to see. That last mile of inflation, especially at the core level, is sticky, but we're significantly off of the highs in inflation. So they've made significant progress, But I think this allows them to slow the cadence of rate cuts in 2025.
Yeah, it seems like for the last 2 years, we've been talking about Fed policy exclusively in terms of how will this bring down inflation. But now it seems like the Fed has to keep two plates spinning in the air. How do you continue reaching that 2% target? But also, how do you keep the job market on solid footing?
Yeah, the beauty of the dual mandate. And I think the reason the Fed started aggressively in September with 50 basis points in a rate cut was because the labor market started to look a little sloppy at the end of the summer. So both the July and August jobs reports were lighter than expected. And September wasn't much better. In October, obviously, with the storms and the Boeing strike, it had a bumpy ride there, too. But we've evened that out over the November timeframe. And here we are averaging about 170,000 jobs being created on a monthly basis. That's the average for the last 3 months, and that's the average for the year. So they're in a better place conceptually on their labor mandate, their full labor mandate. But that's the thing they're keeping the closest eye on.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, coming up with a financial plan ahead of the new year.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. The holiday break is often a great time for couples to sit down and create a financial plan for 2025. We welcome in Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management and author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And as we embark on a new year, we want to lose weight, we want to read more books, we want to spend more time with our spouse, want to look at our phones less. In this whole burst of self-improvement, Sherry, when can we budget time to set a budget for next year?
Well, the holidays might be a good time because you do have time off. And if you live in Chicago, there might be a cold, snowy day. You can light a fire and just start the conversation. It's never too early to start a financial conversation with your loved one.
And what are some good attainable financial goals for next year?
Yeah, I mean, I want to just start at the very top. And I define financial peace of mind as living within your means. That means spending less money than you have coming in. And so I think the first thing for couples to do is to look at their budget. And how much are you spending this year? And that is often a very, very tough question. I have clients come in all the time, new clients. I say, what is your spending? And I get those blank looks. So it does take some time. But if you could figure out what I call your baseline spending, what does it cost to turn the lights on in your home, your mortgage, your taxes, your utilities, your medicine, you know, things that you must have. And then see how that fits into maybe some discretionary spending. But know what you spend is a very powerful tool.
Outside of just the very obvious changing of the calendar aspect of setting a financial goal for the next year, is the post-holiday period a good time to really assess your spending just based on that holiday spending hangover you may be experiencing at that time?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And the end of the year is a good time because you'll get all of your financial statements. A lot of the credit card companies will give you a summary of the areas where you spend, and you might be surprised that dining out or entertainment was very high. Often December is a very high spending month, so it's almost, you know, like they say, dry for January. Maybe you do dry spending in January just to get over that spending hangover. But, you know, one advice I give a lot to my clients is budgeting is overwhelming. So maybe just setting a savings goal. How much would you like to put away every month? And if you set up an automatic transfer of X amount every month out of your account, it's gone and it's saved. Another thing is to really look at your retirement plans and your retirement contributions. Are you both, if you're both working, are you taking advantage of that? And often there's something called a match, where if you contribute 2%, your employer might match that 2%, and that's free money. So adjusting a savings goal as well as looking at your retirement contributions are huge things that can really impact your financial success.
Now, the markets have been really rocking and rolling this year. Now, let's say you are contributing consistently to your 401k. You are taking advantage of that company match, and you're looking at your retirement account balance just based on the BAFO returns of the stock market this year. And you're saying to yourself, that number is pretty good. What can can you do to add to that to make sure to not rest on your laurels, so to speak?
Great point. And the market has been very strong, and you all should be very happy when you open your statements. But there is two things to look at. One is the investments appropriate for you at this point in your life. Did you start working 20 years ago and put everything into the stock market? And, you know, it's 20 years later in life, you're getting closer to retirement. So it's a good time to evaluate something called your asset allocation, your mix of stocks and bonds. A really good investment for a retirement plan is something called a target date fund. And that's a fund based on your retirement date, and it goes from higher stocks when you're younger, and it clicks to lower as you get closer to your retirement. So that's a great investment vehicle for retirement plans. The other thing that a lot of people miss is you may have set up your own. You may say, I wanted to put 50% in stocks, to be simplistic, and 50% in the bond market. But you never check something called the rebalance feature. So what happens is as the market keeps going up, you may be at 65% stocks and not be aware of it. So look at what you had planned on your allocation to be, look at where it is, and make sure that you did check that box for rebalancing, because there will be huge benefits, especially in up markets.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder Rappaport-Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The term Sephora Kids refers to tech-savvy tweens and teens of a growing interest in beauty and skincare. Obviously Sephora, but also Ulta and other makeup retailers are all capitalizing on this trend. Joining us to explain is Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And I'll tell you right now, Bob, I am steeped in this particular trend at this moment because my 11-year-old and all of her friends are really into these products. And it's items 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 on her Christmas list. So this is very much a big deal in that particular demographic.
So you got a Sephora kid at home, huh?
Yeah, we do. And all of her friends are Sephora kids.
Yeah, well, hope it makes it easy to go shopping. I mean, either decide you're going to follow through with it or you're not, right?
Now, that is true, and I'm guessing if you work at Sephora, when you see this trend amongst tweens and teens wanting to come into your store and spend money, you're not going to turn them away. But at the same time, there are some products that are appropriate for people 11, 12, 13, and some that are not.
Well, the thing that's probably most disturbing, I think, for parents is their kids are being marketed to socially as be afraid of the lines in your lips as you get older or plumping your face. Like if you were 80 and you were in Newport Beach all the time, I could see it. But unfortunately, a lot of these serums and things, and they're not cheap, by the way, I guess you know that, but like Drunk Elephant, which is one of the ones people like, $58, can actually hurt their skin at such a young age. And it's a real quandary because I think parents have limited ability to stop that, right?
Yeah, this is something, and we've had this conversation too, that some of these items that you see people, your friends are talking about, and they saw it on social media, and now they're talking about it at school, and you say to them, look, that is for someone our age. We're in our 40s. We need this serum so we can look like you, like we did when we were 14 or 15, and bring back that skin we used to have. You don't need it, and in fact, it can be bad for you. And the good news is, at least they listen to you when you say, like, look, get the stuff that's beneficial for your age right now.
Well, it's based on fear, though, right? Fear of getting old. I mean, we all can ascribe to that at some point. I guess the disturbing thing for me is you look at a lot of these colors on the cosmetics and you can see exactly why they're marketed to teens. They look like, the really colorful pop colors. And, in the end, I think the key, if you're listening to this, is you want to be looking away from anything that's collagen stimulating or anything that's about brightening or glowing or radiance, and read the package. Well, you know, when I was in the coffee business and we had when people came in to offer basically like a Frappuccino kind of thing for their kid, the kids version, it was decaf automatically because we're going to sell it to kids. We're not going to give them caffeine. Well, I don't know anyone that does that I don't think that's an option pretty much anywhere else. But we do have to look out for young people because they don't know what they don't know, right?
That is true. Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York, thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of the show, just go to our stream, skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function. It works both online and with the Odyssey app.